You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
I am so excited for this hour. I know a lot of you are on federal holiday for Juneteenth. A lot of you watching the United States soccer game. If you are joining us, we are so happy that you are here because there's a lot going on today. And I've wanted to do this interview for quite a while with my dear friend and journalist with a capital J, Sam Zeff, over from the NPR station, KCUR. And I called him up yesterday because I saw that he had won a bunch of awards for another story that he just turned. And I said, hey, can you come in and talk about this? And Sam was like, yeah, absolutely. Push the red button. I forgot to tell you that. There you go. So welcome on in, Sam. Full disclosure, Sam used to be my boss, one of them, back in our television days. That's how long we go back years. And I have followed your career and all of the great work you've done across the street. And I think it's important that we talk about this particular story heading into July.
Yeah. You know, as it gets hotter, I start to worry, you know, two-a-days are going to start here come August for high schoolers, for college football players.
Yeah.
It's, as we know, it's not only always hot here, but it's getting hotter and hotter. And just a couple of days ago, you know, when it was really muggy outside,
yeah.
And I start to think about, well, what football players somewhere in America
is packing his bags.
Right. And somewhere in America in August, some young football player at a junior high school, maybe a high school, is going to go to a sweltering practice, and that football player is going to be run to death. It happens every year. It happens multiple times a year. And I just sit back, especially now after 7 or 8 years of doing these stories. I'm kind of plugged into the exertional heat stroke community. It's pretty big. I mean, it takes in trainers, takes in parents, takes in coaches.
If the exertional heat stroke community is so vast, why do we keep having deaths here?
Well, because there are way more coaches than there are exertional heat stroke activists. And I think that there are places where it is not as regulated as much as Scott Anderson, a former head football trainer at the University of Oklahoma and a leading expert on this, says there still is in the football world a warrior culture.
Yeah, you're going to run them. You're not going to give them water, which
right.
I think is criminal. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
Let's start with the deaths here and Garden City Community College, Fort Scott Community College, Dodge City, and Nazarene. The first that you covered was which one, and explain the circumstances of that young person's death.
Yeah, that was in Garden City Community College. I do want to tell you right off, the Dodge City Community College, there was no death there. That was a cross-country runner, a young woman, 19 years old, who was close to death, 3 weeks in intensive care, and probably the only thing that saved her was that she was in such good shape, so lean, that she was able to dissipate all this heat that her body had taken in, unlike the young football players at Garden City, Fort Scott.
I did not realize
that
Delia had survived, because in the beginning they said it did not look good. Thank God she is here. I did not know that.
She was very close to death. At one point, the day after she was transferred to Wesley Medical Center in Wichita, where she was in the ICU for 3 weeks, I'm not so sure that very many people come out of spending 3 weeks in the ICU, but officials at Wesley Medical Center called the Ford County Sheriff's Office wanting to talk to investigators because they were preparing for her death.
Yeah.
She was close to death when she was found in a cornfield by the Ford County Sheriff, a very faint pulse. She was in such bad shape that the sheriff did not wait for EMS to come up to the location. He immediately piled her in the back of his car, started driving to the hospital. She was met by paramedics, where she was transferred and then taken to the local hospital. But the first death was in Garden City Community College, a young man named Braden Bradforth, who grew up on the Jersey Shore right next door to Asbury Park. He had never really been outside of that weather environment. He had never been to Garden City. They had the way they often recruit in junior college, it's all online. Mm-hmm. You upload your stats. You may upload some video. Coaches will look at it, and they will make you an offer over the phone. That's what they did with Braden. Got himself on an airplane. Got himself to Garden City. It was the first day of practice. He had never been in an environment where it was that hot or that elevation. You know, he grew up on the Jersey Shore where it very rarely gets over 90, and it's at 0 feet sea level. They immediately start to run him. As practice ends, he's staggering around. They're going into a team meeting. He gets disoriented, starts to wander about, starts to head back towards the dorm. The coaches are mocking him at this point, telling him that he's a quitter, the sort of thing that you would expect in a football practice. He goes, he collapses. He's found maybe 10 minutes later by teammates. Coaches are called. They come out. They try to hose him down.
With a water hose, like a garden hose.
Right. The preferred way, here's the way that you prevent people from dying from exertional heat stroke. You plunge them into a tub of ice water. It is low tech, and it is cheap, and it works. They were not prepared at Garden City Community College for an exertional heat stroke moment. Paramedics show up. They take him to the local hospital. Where he dies.
His core body temperature was what?
Somewhere 109, 110. But he was essentially dead as he was being taken to the hospital. They knew this because he was vomiting what looked like coffee grounds. That's what happens. You get dehydrated. Your organs start to shut down. And that's the reason that you die. He died there at the hospital. His mother was still back in New Jersey at the Jersey Shore. Local authorities knocked on the door, told his family. His mom was a social worker. She was working a night shift. So the local New Jersey police go knock on the door, talk to his stepdad. He calls the mom and has to break the news that one day after her son landed in Garden City, Kansas, he was dead from exertional heat stroke.
These stories are so devastating, Sam, as a mother, as a father. Yep. You know this because I've always had this vision in my mind that they are packing the high school buddy up. We've all had the senior boy in high school, and you're packing him up, and you are excited because they are going to play football. Their passion is football. They want to exert themselves because they want to impress the coach on the first day. And I always have this horrifying vision in my mind of the parents just bidding farewell to these kiddos, and then they get the call, and it's usually on the first day of practice or thereabouts. It's not 6 months in that this is happening.
No.
It is because of the lack of acclimation to the climate.
Yep.
And in some cases, lack of water.
Water mostly doesn't play a role in this, but I'll tell you what it does. It is an indicator of the culture. If you're not going to let your football players drink water, you're going to do other dangerous things. And it is the warrior culture that we spoke about. I'll tell you something that when I did this very first story, and I'm doing research on this, and I know that the football players at Garden City had been denied water. And I'm doing some research, and I pull up a general order from the Marine Corps about physical activity, about physical training. And in the general order, it says recruits will be able to drink water any time they want.
That's the Marines.
That's the Marines. So if it's good enough for the United States Marine Corps, it certainly should be good for any junior college football player in America.
So our guest is journalist Sam Zeff. We have started with the discussion about the loss of Braden at Garden City. And then this region start seeing loss after loss after loss. And I will ask you when we get back, do these coaches not have access to the internet? Why does this keep happening here? 913-586-7798. You can text in your questions. We might read some of those when we get back. You're listening to Dana and Parks. There's so many devastating aspects about the deaths that we are talking about. The age of these kids. So if you're one of those people that thinks, well, you should just speak up. Some of these kids, Sam, you've said this. This is their only shot at going to college, and it's a community college. Mm-hmm. Real quick before we get to the other deaths in our region, why do we not see the number of deaths in D1 programs? This, I don't want to say this is uniquely community college, but in this area, it seems to be.
Community college down south, still high school deaths there. You don't see it in D1 now, although you did 15, 20 years ago, because there is more NCAA regulation. There are way more trainers and medical professionals involved at K-State, at KU, at the University of Missouri. Ideally, the coaches should answer to the trainers when it comes to medical issues. Also, when it comes to weather issues. That's not always true. It all, you know, depends on who the coach is. It depends on the relationship. But if you've got a strong athletic training staff, which you would at most D1 schools and D2 schools for that matter, you're going to have a lot fewer of these injuries. And there's also more, I think, stringent NCAA rules about that. The junior college ranks, while there are some regulations, but they're mostly suggestions. The training staffs are usually pretty thin. The day that Braden died at Garden City Community College, there was one athletic trainer in the entire athletic department at Garden City for multiple sports, and there was no trainer at the practice the day that he died.
So why then, after Braden's death, is there not an all-call put out to the sweltering Midwest community colleges saying, this is very real, exertional heat stroke is fatal, these are all young kids who have something in common, they are 18, 19, leaving home for the first time, desperate to impress the coach, and some of them, if not all of them, coming from different elevations and lower climates. Where was the all-call so that Braden's death, as tragic as it was, didn't somehow serve to prevent the deaths that then happened at Fort Scott and Nazarene? Do none of them have the internet?
I'll add one other common denominator. Most of these deaths are big football linemen.
The big guys.
Yeah, 250, 300 pounds. They just don't dissipate the heat the way a smaller football player does. There's some studies out there that just suggest there's no reason for a football lineman to run 40-yard sprints because in an entire game they may not run 40 yards because they have to control the 1 or 2 yards immediately in front of them. So the training of how you do these big linemen should be different. To answer your question, I thought that myself. After I did the story in Garden City, I thought, you know what? I've solved that problem.
You're right? Done.
Hundreds of thousands of people heard the story or read the story.
Yes.
And I thought,
education.
This can't happen again. And then when I got word of what happened at Fort Scott Community College, I thought,
You've got to be kidding me.
Yeah. If you told me after the Garden City story that 2 years later I'd be doing the exact same story, I would have bet my entire retirement fund that you were wrong. And it turns out it was so eerily close. The coaches, the way they were being punished by running, the lack of compassion, the lack of training staff at the practice, it was a rerun, right? It was just in a different college, different junior college in a different part of the state But the facts were eerily similar.
Tell us about Tyrell. Came up from New Orleans.
Yeah, he was, again, a 300-pound lineman. He was a freshman, beloved. I think we may overuse the gentle giant metaphor, but it was true with Braden. It was true with Tyrell. And he comes up, it's day two or three, it's training. They're not really, there's no footballs out there. They're not like running any plays. It's all just training. And the players tell me, as did the former trainer at the time, that the coach, a guy named Carson Hunter, a lawyer turned football coach, a mercurial man to be sure, there was a candy wrapper that he found on the practice field. He immediately gathered the team and made them run what they call gassers, which they were running across the field, not the length of the field, but across the field. And then they were doing down-ups or up-downs, depending on how you want to look at it. That's where you fall to the ground, you hit your chest on the ground, you pop right back up.
The temperature was what that day, Sam?
Lower 90s, not particularly brutal for this time of year, but again, you're talking about a 300-pound young man who comes from, by the way, a hot, you know, it's not like he's not used to the heat, but that kind of exertion in that kind of heat, repeatedly, over and over, he's running. He collapses. They briefly stop practice. Players tried to give him water, but the coaches denied him this water. And eventually, he's taken to a local hospital. He's transferred to KU Med, where he's in intensive care for a couple of weeks before he dies. The real horrible thing is that the Fort Scott Community College never accurately communicated to his family just how bad he was. His mom told me that they said they took him to KU as a precautionary measure. She didn't know, Dana, how bad her son was until a nurse at KU Med called to tell her and then paid for her airline ticket to come up and be with her son just before.
Because they knew he wasn't going to survive.
Yes.
Same core body temperature, 109, 110.
Yeah, pretty high. But by the time he gets to KU Med, there's already the shutdown of organs.
How does it kill you, Sam?
That's the way it kills you. Your organs shut down, your kidneys, your heart, there's just this huge fever in your body, and it starts to eat away at your organs, and that's how you die. Again, had he collapsed, had they had a tub of ice water, and they plunged him into that ice water, he would have lived. He would have come out unscathed, but they were unprepared for that.
And that's not to say that we should be running these young men irresponsibly in hot weather from different climates because .. Well, over here we have an ice bath. I understand what you're saying. That can be something that reverses this, but I still think the root of the problem is the way they are handling these practices. And keep in mind, for those of you listening right now, we still have two more cases in our area to talk about, and I will ask you, when we get back, where the hell are the criminal charges? Where are the criminal charges for negligent homicide in these cases? You're listening to Dana and Parks. We've talked about the death of Braden in Garden City, talked about the death of Tyrell at Fort Scott Community College. What happened at Nazarene, Sam?
It was another hot day. It was a young man named Mizell Law, and he passed out. Now, there were trainers on site. They managed to get him inside, started to cool him down. They called 911, Olathe Fire, or MEDAC showed up, took him to the hospital, Overland Park Regional. There were complications, and he died in the hospital a couple of days later. The family, had negotiated for some time with Mid-America Nazarene. There was some settlement. It wasn't public. Mid-America Nazarene, of course, unlike a community college, is a private institution. But I think that the family was as satisfied as they could be with what Nazarene agreed to.
So I will ask you again, how did Nazarene happen after Fort Scott, and how did Fort Scott happen after Garden City?
You know, this puzzles me as much as it puzzles you. And I think Nazarene is off by itself. There are circumstances there that are vastly different than what we saw at Garden City, Fort Scott, or Dodge City Community College, which we're going to talk about. They were way more prepared for this sort of event, but it's vastly different. The circumstances are vastly different than what happened for what we've also talked about. How did it happen at Fort Scott Community College after Braden died at Garden City Community College? Same conference, right? The Jayhawk Community Conference. They play each other. These coaches know each other. Although there is a huge turnaround in the coaching ranks in both football and sometimes basketball in community college. So how did they not know? They must know. I mean, they talk about these things at coaches' conferences.
They would have to.
They've got trainers, albeit they don't have as many as they probably should. But, you know, they've got trained, licensed sports medicine people on site who know how dangerous it is for big linemen to be run in those sorts of circumstances. 97% of exertional heat stroke deaths in football players are linemen. So we know that this is a vulnerable cohort, and we know there's scholarly research out there. We know what to do to prevent those injuries and deaths. And the only reason that it doesn't happen, Dana, is what keeps running through my mind all the time, is that there is still a warrior culture among football coaches. I fear that that's not going away anytime soon in our environment.
And I'm not poo-pooing the programs at these community colleges. I don't want this to come off like, well, it's just a community college. I'm not. However, that being said, these kids are not gearing up to go to the Super Bowl, Sam.
No.
And I don't know what kind of drive and money that football brings into the small community colleges. But, you know, really, at the end of the day, this is extracurricular for these boys. They might get a little bit of scholarship money. They're not playing for Florida State. Not that I'm saying this would be okay at Florida State. So this warrior mentality, why?
But these players, most of the time, have ambitions beyond junior college football.
Of course.
Could be D1, could be D2. You know, they're looking for a 4-year school to complete their education. There are players in the NFL who started their career at Fort Scott Community College.
And these boys want to be the one that does.
Right. So they're always looking for what's next. What's going to happen after my 2 years at Fort Scott?
Okay.
Well, now, Fort Scott, they shut down their program a few years ago. They said they ran out of money. But at Garden City Community College or any other community college in Kansas that has football, what's my next step? What's my 4-year option here? And junior college coaches have an enormous amount of sway in the 4-year college community. So you don't want to piss your junior college coach off.
One more reason that they are bending over backwards to do everything they can on day one or two. Where are the criminal charges? That's question number one. And then I will follow that up with, who is the governing body over all of these colleges that can't send an email and say, look, this has happened again? There has to be a governing body structure.
Yeah. best to my knowledge, I've seen one criminal case. It was in Mississippi. A girls' high school basketball team, the coaches were charged after running them
to death.
It is very difficult to charge somebody. There is it's difficult to recover a lot of money. In both Garden City and Fort Scott, they were capped at $500,000 because of qualified immunity.
Why?
Well, because if you're, and I'm just saying this is the legal definition. If you're performing your job and you haven't done something that a jury or case law would consider reckless or outrageous, just because you've made a mistake. Remember where you hear qualified immunity all the time, and that is in law enforcement with police. Well, it extends to other people who work in government, and that includes coaches in high schools or, in this case, community colleges. So they are protected by qualified immunity, which is why the recovery is capped, and also another reason that you wouldn't find criminal charges.
Because if criminal charges became the norm, I guarantee you the deaths would stop. Once, because if they're not paying attention in Dodge City that they've lost a child in Garden City, they sure as hell would start paying attention to the headline that a coach has been criminally charged.
Right. As we know, it is and should be a high bar to charge somebody criminally.
Sure. Put it in front of a jury, Sam. You've covered trials longer than I have. Put this in front of any jury, and I think a reasonable person, when a 300-pound young man is throwing up coffee grounds and is staggering and then collapses, a reasonable person on any jury would say, how do you not get him a medical emergency help yesterday?
Yeah. Right. And of course, the facts and the law oftentimes collide. But are you right? One football coach going to the pokey is going to solve a lot of these problems. But we, you know, you have these discussions when there is a police misconduct or if there is misconduct by a public school teacher that seems like it's criminal, but in the case of the coaches, if you can't show that it was reckless, then you're not going to get criminal charges. And also, you're not going to be able to get past qualified immunity where there would be some giant settlement or jury award because of qualified immunity.
So while deaths are rare, I'm reading, exertional heat illness remains one of the leading causes of preventable sports-related deaths, particularly during August preseason practices, with the vast majority of these occurring in football.
Yeah.
Three of the four cases that you just won a bunch of awards for the last one, Sam, by the way, at outstanding reporting. Three of the four cases were football. The final case out of Dodge City involved a young woman running cross country. And I want to spend a little bit of time when we get back talking about Delia and what happened to her on Dane and Park. Stick with us. So one of the awards that you just found out you won, and I know that's not why you do the work, you won a Murrow for your latest reporting in this space. And we talked about the Garden City death of Braden and the death of Tyrell at Fort Scott and the death of Mizell at Nazarene. We would be remiss if we did not talk about your latest project, which sadly was the near death of a young cross-country runner named Delia in Dodge City. And I remember it involved corn. I actually remember that detail of this story. What happened to that poor child?
You know, Delia Montez, was 19 years old, 20 years old now. A freshman at Dodge City Community College, graduated from Dodge City High School just before she went to Dodge City Community College. And Dana, this might be the most egregious case yet. She didn't die, luckily, but she was very close to death. on the first day of cross-country practice. And remember, she's been running cross-country in Dodge City, so she's acclimated.
She's acclimated.
But it's 102 degrees, 105 heat index. That now, they use what they call a wet bulb globe temperature, which is always different than what the air temperature is. It takes into consideration the wind, humidity, the how much sun is actually hitting the earth. And so those temperatures are oftentimes lower, but that doesn't mean they're not dangerous. But still, the National Weather Service had a heat advisory out. Heat index was 105 degrees. And they decided to have practice not at 6 o'clock in the morning, not at 6 o'clock at night, but at 1:30 in the afternoon, the hottest part of the day. They jog from the Dodge City Community College campus about 10 minutes away, and they were going to run a section, which is a mile by a mile. This section happened to be a cornfield. So they jogged down there, and at some point, and we don't know exactly when, but Delia disappears. We don't know exactly when coaches or her teammates know that she's missing, but we do know that the first call to campus security saying, hey, we're missing a person, it was about 2 hours into the practice. It takes them another 90 minutes or so before an hour to an hour and a half to alert the Dodge City Ford County authorities. So they call there, they mobilize. Now, I remember as I was going through these dispatch logs, it was a busy day in Ford County. By the time they got a call about Delia, a train had hit a pickup truck. There was a fire at a scrapyard, and there was a fire at a trailer park. So, but all that changed when they got the call and said, hey, we're missing this woman. They scramble everybody. At one point, there's probably a dozen law enforcement officials looking for Delia. That first, they're not really sure exactly where she's at. They can't get a straight answer from the Dodge City Community College coaches or security. They finally center on this cornfield. But the corn, 6 feet tall, and where do you look? So they're looking all around. Finally, a deputy, a Ford County deputy, sees that something is amiss heading into this cornfield. He gets out. He sees that either the corn had been trampled or the grass had been trampled. He goes into the cornfield about 15 feet, and that's when he sees Delia. Keys his mic. The Ford County Sheriff himself is out looking for her. He's there along with another deputy about 30 seconds later. In a radio transmission, the sheriff calls dispatch and says, we have a very faint pulse. Piles her in the back of his patrol car and starts racing towards the hospital. About halfway there, he meets the EMS crew. They make a quick transfer, take her to the local hospital. She's airlifted to Wesley Medical Center, a big medical center in Wichita, where she spends 3 weeks in the ICU.
You remember her core temperature, Sam?
No, I don't. It was not that wasn't shared with me. I never saw any of the medical records in that. But if you're 3 weeks in ICU, and at one point, the Wesley Medical Center people call the next day. She's been there maybe 12 hours. Calls the Ford County Sheriff. They want to talk to the investigators because they're pretty sure she's going to die. They also managed to get her family to Wichita. But somehow, and the only theory is that because she's a cross-country runner, not a 300-pound lineman, she's lean, and somehow, while she's up to three and a half hours in this cornfield, we're not sure exactly, at least 2.5, probably 3.5, her internal organs are cooking. But she's so lean that she's able to dissipate a lot of that heat.
Wow.
That's the only reason
she's
that
alive.
Delia Montes is alive
Did
today.
Did she have any lasting complications from this?
I don't know. You know, the family was, as families often are, you know this from your reporting days, are pretty chatty up front, and then at some point, for some reason, they shut down. There was never a lawsuit filed. I don't know if there was any monetary settlement between the, the Montez family and Dodge City Community College. But she did. She came out. She went back to school. And since that time, I don't know what's happened.
Can I just ask the dumbest question ever that is the most obviously dumb question, and I know our listeners are screaming it. Why the hell do they not practice these kids inside in the heat of August?
Well, it doesn't. It sort of defeats the purpose of cross country running. Although they can do it. I mean, they could just do 2 miles on a treadmill. That's not the sort of the sport of cross country. But here's how you get around that. Steve Vockrott was my colleague at KCUR, longtime reporter. He was also a cross country runner at KU.
That's right.
And when I talked to him about it, he said, well, you know, of course it's hot, but we figured out, but the way we figured a way around it was we started at 6 o'clock in the morning, right? It's not really
rocket science.
No, it is the equivalent of plunging you in an ice tub. It is so simple and it always works.
Remind people where they can find your reporting on this, Sam.
KCUR.org.
KCUR.org. Our guest, Sam Zeff, my dear friend, journalist, capital J. Congratulations on all of your success and keep fighting the fight. We're back after this on Dana and Parks.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.